Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Mad Bomber Racing Podcast. Today, we got a little bit on the schedule today, but just some housekeeping things first and foremost before we get out of there, before we get down, before we get started. Thanks for listening to everybody who's listening, all the new listeners, all the people who's tuning in on all the platforms. Thank you all for listening. At this point in time, I don't have any sponsors, so until I get a sponsor, I'll let you guys know, and we'll just cross that bridge when we get there. But as of right now, it's just me. We're rolling with it. Future plans for the podcast. I do plan on eventually having some guests on here, maybe some friends and some people that I've met in the car industry. Hopefully I can get some notable people on here. But as of right now, it's just going to be me, and we're going to discuss car news, car culture, car entertainment, and things just going around automotive news just in general. And so without further ado, let me just get into it. First bit of news that we have, which is an interesting bit of news, because it's not necessarily surprising to me. Well, it's surprising, but then it's like it kind of just makes sense. I don't know if you all have been aware of this, but or have been made aware of this, but Ken Block, he has signed with Audi for the foreseeable future. And people saying it's shocking, and it's kind of shocking, but then it's kind of not, because we all knew that his deal and his sponsorship with Ford was coming to an end. That was the whole premise of the Unicorn versus the World. We all kind of knew that. They mentioned it in the videos, and it wasn't necessarily a surprise that, you know, that whole thing was going to end. I mean, you could tell just by the way they were running the Unicorn. They literally were trying to blow it up. And so, yeah, it's probably going to sit in storage until the foreseeable future. And we knew that the Blue Oval and Ken Block was coming to an end. They had like a great run in rally and whatnot. But as far as Ken Block signing with Audi, it makes sense, especially because of Audi's history in rally. I mean, we all know Audi Group B. We all know that history and how checkered. I won't say checkered, but we all know how good they were back in the day in Group B. So for them to be in rally and to have Ken Block, especially with the route that they've been going, is, and also as far as like Hoonigan is concerned, we all know that Brian Scotto and his Audi and how he feels about that. So it's just it seems like it's a decision that makes a lot of sense, and hopefully they get him back in rally, and hopefully they get him a competitive car and he can just move on. And, you know what I'm saying, continue doing good things with that. And maybe they'll get him in an electric car. Who knows? We'll have to see what the future holds for that. It's just interesting. Hopefully this deal lasts for a while as well. It just makes sense. I think it's good. It's good for him. Good for the company. Good for the community to see something different. Good for a lot of us over here in the States to be exposed to Audis in a different level. Because, yeah, we know that, like, some people know about it, but a lot of people don't know the potential of Audi and things of that nature. So it should be good. It should be good to see it on the channel once that comes and once that whole thing is all, you know, sorted out and things like that. So I'm excited to see that. I'm excited for the future. We'll see how that goes. Another bit of car news. I don't know if everybody's been watching, but the RPM Act, which basically is the EPA trying to tell us that we cannot modify cars anymore. I know there's a thing going on in California about them having to do ECU. I don't know exactly what it's called, but basically they have to get the ECU check to see if the stock tune is on when they get inspections, which is super annoying for on their part. I don't know how that's gonna work out, if that's even passed, but I know that's like the word. I know with this thing, EPA is trying to they're trying to enforce, I think it's Enforce Clean Air Act, which I think that also has a lot to do with like their initiative for like electric vehicles in California as well. But from what I'm reading, it says in 2016 the RPM Act was introduced to combat the EPA's mission to enforce the Clean Air Act within motorsports, within the motorsports realm, by banning the by banning the act of converting streetcars into race-only vehicles. And yes, that includes vehicles that would never see street time and would be transported to and from competition sites by trailer. So basically, they're saying you can't take a production car and make it a race car. And that's kind of trash, in my opinion, because the EPA is shit. So they kept us from the skyline and all the other bullshit. You know how they go. So I don't, you know, there's a link. I'll put links in the description to all of these news articles as well. If y'all want to, you know, sign a petition and be a part of that. What else we got? New York, they are following California's lead and banning the new sale of gasoline cars by 2023, by 2035, excuse me. I don't necessarily know how I feel about this. I'm not necessarily excited about electric cars. I don't believe that electric cars in the next, what's this, 2021 to 2035, that's what, 14 years. I don't believe that they're going to be, I don't believe that we're going to have a fully electric Toyota Corolla in 13 years. I just don't see it. Maybe they will. I mean, you can go back and check out the Let's Talk EVs. We might have another episode where we discuss get more in depth about it. But I don't believe that we're going to have that. Let me rephrase this. I don't believe that EVs are going to be the future for any other places other than LA and New York and like other big cities, because where I live at, it just doesn't make any sense to have an EV. It won't work personally. It just doesn't make a lot of sense for people to have EVs. So, I mean, I've always said that EVs will be a powertrain option. I don't believe that forcing auto manufacturers to push the limits of their technology and what they can create, because the lithium battery will always be the limitation when it comes to electric vehicles. And I don't believe that it's a fair assessment to say that we're going to have enough material in general to just continue to create lithium batteries on that scale to then have everybody where everybody can afford it. That's what I'm saying. Like an affordable car is a Toyota Corolla or a Nissan Versa, right? But that just means that I don't believe that we're going to have a massive production of cars to where like people will convert over to electric cars for that. And I don't believe that, like, even like right now, the $30,000 electric car, like probably the cheapest one is a Mini, but it only has it's 120, 160 mile range, and that's just unacceptable in my opinion. I can't do any, I mean, I could make 160 miles work, but that would be me literally charging my car almost every single day. And a lot of people work at, they just don't have the ability to charge that many cars. Like, I know even in the small area that I work, in the company that I work at, I would just assume that on a regular basis, we have maybe 50 to 70 cars, right? And let's say that half of those cars, let's say 35 of those cars are electric, right? And most people drive these SUVs that are like, you know, the Nissan Kicks and the those smaller SUVs, like those Kia Sportages and things like that, right? So let's just say that everybody has to drive one. Let's just say like half of the electric car, half of those 35 are electric, and then the other half are just, you know, small four-door sedans, right? That means that there would probably need to be at least like a handful of charging stations, right? And that would mean that half of those people would have a new car. And it just doesn't make any sense, right? By 2035. And I know this is New York, and if you're listening to New York, I'm sorry for you. I don't even know would people even drive in New York I don't even know. That doesn't even make any sense to drive in New York, because if you live in the city and you work in the city, it's like you could just use the public transportation unless you just don't want to. And I don't know, New York has like a bunch of ridiculous fees, and there's a lot of YouTube videos about it, and I just feel like it's a dream that people are trying to push, that politicians are trying to push on auto manufacturers, and then they're trying to push on the enthusiasts, and I just don't believe that it's going to work. That's just my opinion. If you have a differing opinion, please let me know. But we'll see. But on to some more. Another topic that I really wanted to discuss that was really interesting to me, and that I really just like it. I saw this, and I've been like watching this whole process for a little while, and it all kind of makes sense to me. It all, I don't say it makes sense, but it's all just very intriguing to me. I don't know if anybody's ever, if you've been on Instagram and you've been perusing and scrolling through and seeing this K48 by Neutron Engines. Craig Williams at Neutron Engines, actual mechanical engineer, full-time mechanical engineer, and he's designing this on the side as a side project. And basically, it is a Honda K24 design, V8 design. Basically, it uses K24 heads, K20 or K24 heads, off-the-shelf heads. They're one's facing forward, one's facing backwards with a timing chain on each side. And it's set up in a hot V configuration, which is cool, because hot V is pretty, if y'all don't know what a hot V is, it's pretty, I don't say it's old technology, but it was first introduced in Ferrari's F1 program back in the early 80s. And basically what it is a traditional V, and you have your intakes on the bottom and your turbo sitting inside the V, right? So it's a twin turbo sitting inside the V. And so the air goes in from the bottom and it goes up into the turbos. So yeah, there's some diagrams online, and it's actually a pretty cool setup, and it makes a lot of sense. Like the more and more I look at them, just like, huh, that makes more sense. And like the reasoning why, but the reason why I got interested in this particular project was because it's just a guy who's doing it, and I'm interested to see how it turns out. I don't know if it'll be good, if it'll be bad, if it'll fail. I honestly don't really even care. Like, I just hope he pull it off, to be honest. I'll leave his link in the description as well to his Instagram, and y'all can follow that and look at that, and if you haven't already. But it's just really interesting, because like, this is something that nobody's really doing. Like, nobody's done this before, and I think he'll have it in a setup to where you can probably purchase this. But yeah, that's crazy. He having an NA configuration as well as a twin turbo configuration. I think that's just cool. More power to him. I hope it turns out better than anybody ever imagined, and it turns out to be the shit, and it's fucking cool, and it sounds amazing, and it just works. You know what I'm saying? That's really my whole thing. But back to this whole hot V setup. I was looking at the M6 GT3 car because I was like, well, like, just in the infinite cycle of my mind, I was just thinking, like, maybe I could make like a car that's cool to build would be an M6, right? Because a lot of people don't build M6 race cars, and if they do, like, it's few and far between, and it's just really cool to build a car like that, right? Because I mean, M6 is a fucking huge cars, but for what they are, they're fairly light. I mean, the GT3 car is like 1,250 kgs, which is, I mean, for a big car like that, that is not really a heavy car. And so I think it's just interesting, and that's why I got turned on to the hot V setup, because it when you're looking at it, it makes a lot of sense for it to work like that, right? And like, for packaging reasons, heat reasons, and it's just cool. Like, I thought it was I think it's a cool design. I think it would be a cool project to build sometime later on down the road once those prices go down. Because if I'm not mistaken, M6 is right now, let me look really quick. M6 is right now like 35. People selling for like 35K, which isn't too terrible. I mean, especially considering it's an M6. But I mean, you can get, you know, it's not something that you want to like jump in. Like, it's not a lot of money. It's a lot of money, but then again, like, in the grand scheme of things, it's not necessarily a lot of money. So you don't want to like jump in and be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna drop 36K on a car, and you know, you end up looking dumb. So it's all just interesting, like a lot of ideas to be thrown around. I know I was thinking that like sometime down the road finding another like at least getting back into a BMW, maybe an maybe E46 M3, maybe another maybe trying to finish off what I had originally planned for the BMW when I had it the first time, because I don't know if I've explained this before, but back in a little while ago, probably like 8 years ago, I had a 2002 BMW 330i. So it's the four-door. It's a five-speed with the with the M package. It was the sport package. It was before the facelift. Before it was pre-facelift, right? And what I wanted to do was I wanted to build a World Touring Car Championship replica car. And I really just wanted to drive it on the street. And I think, like, some things happened, and I wasn't able to keep the car. And I was kind of upset about it because I really liked that car. Like, it was a really fun car. It was built in an era when technology and, like, automotive technology, it wasn't too crazy. It wasn't, like, too crazy like it is today with, like, dual clutches and things like that. So, it was really, like, in my opinion, the pinnacle of what a driver's car would be, because it had enough technology in it to where it was like a little bit ahead of its time, and it was like you had like the traction control, it was the fuel injection was right, so it wasn't like crazy, but then it was like it was still very like mechanical feeling, and I really enjoyed that car when I drove it. I'll tell you this story about it. My friend, he had a 2008 Subaru STI. We was going to Cars and Coffee, right? We was leaving Cars and Coffee. We drove. That was when I was living in North Carolina, and we drove to Cars and Coffee from where we were at, from Goldsboro, and it was in, I think it was like Cary, if I'm not mistaken, Cary Cars and Coffee. I have to find a picture of it and put it on Instagram if I still have it. But basically, that was when I had seen if I remember right. That was when I had seen the first time I ever seen an AMG. It was a black series, so it was the one with the gold wing doors. I thought it was the coolest shit ever, right? But it was just a bunch of us, and I drove. I had my BMW. My friend TJ, he had his STI. Ice was driving a 550i with the M Sport package, with the V8, which is just crazy fast too. But I'll never forget, we were leaving and we were driving past, we were going to go past Crabtree Mall, and I pulled up next to him at a traffic light, and I don't want to say I beat him, just being honest, we were close. I was ahead, but it was a car that pulled out in front of us, so, you know, it was all fun and games. That BMW was a really fun car to drive. Maintenance on it was a bitch though. When I got it, it had some leaks, had some issues, and if I remember correctly, what needed to be changed on that car was the oil pan gasket, the oil filter housing gasket, and the coolant expansion tank had cracked. So if you know those E46s, you know that's such a pain in the ass, man. And that took me so, it didn't take me a long time, but it was just such an intensive process, and it was something that I had never dug that deep into taking something apart like that, and it was very scary to take it apart and then have to put it back together and hope for the best. But I ended up getting that car back together and back running perfectly fine. All the leaks were taken care of. I ended up swapping in. What did I do to that car? I ended up having to do brake rotors, brake lines. I had Hawk brake pads. I had Brembo blank rotors. I had the ATE brake fluid. That was like right after they banned Super Blue, ATE Super Blue, because it was blue, which didn't make any sense to me, but I guess the rules or the law says that your brake fluid has to be clear, so it couldn't be blue, which didn't make any sense to me, because I was like, it doesn't change anything by being blue, but they banned it, and you can't buy Super Blue anymore because it's blue, which is just the weirdest thing ever, but that car was such a fun car. Those Hawk pads were, I think it was like the Hawk HPS's, if I'm not mistaken. they were fun, man. It was a really good like street car, and I had plans to build that into more of a street car with like an exhaust and like coilovers and wheels and tires. And man, that car was a fun car. If I can ever find another E46 four-door, then I would definitely build it to the street car level that I wanted to have it at the first time. It was a great car. And then I ended up getting the 240 like not too long after that, and I daily drove the 240 for a long time. Like, now that I come to think of it, I drove the 240 because it had a single cam in it, and I daily drove the 240 literally for 4.5, almost 5 years until it blew up. I drove that car back and forth to North Carolina like twice. Yeah, I drove, man, that car was fun, man. 240, once it gets back on the road, I'll be driving the car again. And I know, like, one time when I was driving the 240, I'll tell you the story about how the 240 ended up in the situation that it's in now. I remember, like, it was in Alabama, like, it gets hot, right? It gets, like, it'd be, like, 97 degrees with, like, 80-90% humidity, right? So, it gets, like, insanely hot, right? And I noticed that the 240 didn't like heat at all. Like, if you were to drive the car, like, it would, like, cold start would be fine. Like, it would start up perfectly fine. You would be able to drive it. But then if you turn it off and then you try to start it back up, like, it wouldn't, it act like it didn't want to start up, right? So, I didn't really pay it any attention because I just didn't have the time or like the money to even invest into something like if it were to be broken. So I kind of just like let it. I was like, all right, whatever, I'll fix it when I get time, right? And it had an oil leak in the right? It was a slow leak, and I would keep an eye on it, and I would add oil, and it was just I just wasn't in the position to properly maintain the car like I should have been doing, right? I'll take full responsibility for that and say that I just wasn't in the proper situation. I was living in an apartment. I didn't have the tools I needed to, you know, fix the car and to get all that stuff and to get it situated like I wanted to, right? So one day I was driving my daughter I got off work, and then my mom had asked to have my daughter come and stay with her, right? So at the time, my mom lived like, it was like a 20-30 minute drive. So I got out of work and I'm like, all right, cool, let's go. And I'm driving down the highway and like I hear this like knock, right? It's just like boom. And I'm like, that's strange. And like the car started, like it started, like it didn't start to overheat, but it just started to like, slow down. Like it's just like, So I'm like, man, I need to make it to like my parents' house. And then I can figure out what's going on once I get it there. I'm like, because once I get there, like if I need to get back, I can get back. But I have my daughter with me, so I needed to get to where I was going. I didn't want to be on the side of the road and cause any more problems, right? Cool. So I'm driving and driving and driving to get all the way down to exit one. And it just like cut off. Boom, done, right? Won't start, nothing. Like, fuck, man. So we ended up having to call my dad to come pick us up off the side of the road and tow the car to his house, because it was just easier to tow it to his house, especially because I was living in an apartment. And you know, when you live in an apartment, like if your car is like out of commission, like they'll tow your car, right? So I didn't want my car to be towed because I didn't have the money to, you know, get my car out of impound. So I ended up like looking at it. I thought it was just a radiator, to be honest. Like when I first looked at it, like the top of the radiator tank had cracked, right? So I thought it was just a radiator, right? I was like, cool, I can replace a radiator. I went on Rock Auto, bought a OE replacement, and put it in. Once it got in, I think I sent it to my parents' house. It got in, I went down there, put it back in, and this is where the engine blew up. And this was totally an oversight, right, on my part. Like, I knew I was low on oil, right? But it didn't click with me that the incline of my parents' driveway would affect it that much. So I got the intercooler, not the intercooler, but the radiator back into the car. And because the car was backed into the, backed up, so the rear end of the car was on the garage, was facing the garage, right? So we had pushed it in, so the front of the car was basically towards the street. We had backed it in. And I replaced it. It was super simple to do, and I'm bleeding the radiator, and like all of a sudden it just like starts knocking. I get the dreaded rod knock, and I'm just like, fuck, man. So once that happened, I ended up having to, like, after about almost a whole summer, it was a while, I ended up having to tow the car to my grandparents' house. And that was like a whole ordeal in and of itself, because so that's a story for another day. And once we get to my grandparents' house, I pull the motor, and I'm just like, first things first, like, once I pull the motor out, I flip it over and I take a look at it, and sure enough, rod bearing material.